Hey.
Hello.
Hey.
Wanna know about something pretty cool?
Yeah.
We're doing extra episodes.
We're doing extra episodes, everyone.
Bonus episodes for your listening pleasure.
VIP.
Super VIP, super cool all the time.
Yes.
All you have to do is head over to our Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
Patreon.com/arthistorybabes.
Mm-hmm.
You can donate $1. You can donate $5.
Yeah.
You can donate $100.
Whoa.
That'd be awesome.
You can donate whatever your little heart desires, and you will have access to monthly bonus episodes. So if you just cannot get enough of the Art History Babes, you should definitely check it out.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. We appreciate you.
And the episodes are great. We've done one.
It was
great.
And
we're going to do more. And it was good. It was really good.
It was really topical and really interesting.
Very relevant.
Yeah. Everybody check it out. And thanks.
Thanks so much.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the art history babes.
Welcome to the podcast. I'm Corey.
I'm Jen.
I'm Ginny. And we are the Art History Babes. Hey, everyone.
Hey.
That was so great.
That was sensual.
I remember watching this movie, I think called For a Good Time Call, or like For a Good Time.
Of course, that's what my voice reminds you of.
For a Good Time Call. And it's these two broke girls, gals, who started doing phone sex. Like they started their little phone sex business.
I mean, it's lucrative.
Yeah.
Really?
And they would just like they got so good at it that they would be like multitasking, like painting their toes or like cleaning the bathroom, being like, oh yeah, I'm like so not into it, but we're able to fake it.
I knew someone who tried that once, the phone sex thing. She said it made her feel weird, so she didn't do it for very long.
Oh, really?
But like, yeah.
I feel like I would be okay with it.
I think I would be really bad at it. I'd laugh the whole time.
Maybe. I would too. You're doing what now?
Yeah, I like, I don't know. Let's talk about our sex habits. I like to keep things light and fun a lot of the time, so I feel like I would just be laughing and like.
I have a story.
I don't know what I would do. I think I'd just go silent like I did just then.
when he says something really uncomfortable,
I'd just
he's
be like.
Your face is so great.
But mad props to people who are good at it. Like, because I think that's it's a form of, like, acting. Like, it's very, a very theatrical thing.
What's your story?
Oh, well, I had a boyfriend in high school who was very ahead of his time as far as the things that he liked. And,
ahead of his time.
Well, you know, we were in
doing
high school.
Doing things for the future.
we were in high school, for God's sake. But I didn't have a cell phone because I didn't get a cell phone until I was like 17, which I see kids nowadays running around
with an
iPhone and they're like 5. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Yeah.
Seriously, when I have kids, they will get a phone when they have a car because I think that's a good time for kids to have a
phone. Like, and so.
It's not necessary younger than that.
His whole thing was like that I had a really sexy voice, and I was like,
we had a listener that thought you had a really sexy voice.
That was so sweet. I was like, oh, thanks. And then I made my most unsexy voice. Oh, thank you. He was like really into that, and my parents would go to bed, and then it was like phone time, and I'd have to make sure that my parents were asleep because I had to use the phone, like the house phone. I didn't have a cell phone. And yeah, one night it was like me on the phone and we're on the phone. I'm not going to get more into what was happening on the phone.
They were on the phone.
We were on the phone. I will never forget my mother's voice when she picked up the phone and was like, Jennifer! And just like broke my eardrum. And
oh my God.
My mom has freakish strength for a 5 foot tall Mexican lady, and she literally kicked my door down, and I was in a lot of trouble. And so after that, my lovely boyfriend actually got me like a cell phone because that was, he was like, you know what, that was traumatic and terrifying. And here's a cell phone for you. And I was like, wow, thanks. And that was my first phone.
Wow.
Little Nokia flip phone.
That's like a low-key sugar daddy situation.
I know. God damn it. I wasn't very nice to him. You live and you learn. If you're out there, you're a good boyfriend. Sorry I was a jerk, but anyway. Okay, I digress. But so what are we talking about today? We're talking about...
the color black.
Black. Wow. Corey, do you need a Ricola?
Honestly, looking at like the sound waves when you said like that, it looks like a centipede, like a millipede.
Yeah,
like all the other ones, you know, are up and down with our inflections, and that one's just like
I didn't know. I was trying to make it ominous.
It was definitely ominous. Oh man! So we're talking about the color black.
Yeah, as if you've been listening to us for a while, we had our color theory episodes, and we've also done an episode on purple.
Fuck yeah.
We've had intentions of sprinkling in episodes about specific colors because people really seem to dig that and think it's really cool. So this is, I think we probably picked this one because we all are pretty partial to the color black. Yeah. So there's a lot to be said. There's a lot of things.
The black episode.
Yeah. So obviously we're going to talk about black in art, but also some kind of social constructs revolving around black and different impressions of black. I wanted to start with a legend of the first portrait or work of art ever, really.
Oh.
And it was done in black, and it was done by a woman. So, imagine this. You are a young, ancient Greek woman. And you're with your boyfriend in a cave because you still live at home. He still lives at home.
That's what I did.
You're not married, but...
Dude, I go to a cave right now. Like, that sounds great.
Yeah.
That sounds really cool, actually. Like, there's take me on a date to a cave.
Take me to a cave.
Yeah, like, I'm in. That sounds awesome.
So in this Cave of Wonders... the young man is a sailor, and he's going to go away for a long time on a journey. And, you know, if you've...
a young Odysseus, perhaps?
Exactly, right? An Odysseus type. You know, anytime a young Greek man goes out to sea, he's going to be gone for a long time.
If anyone out there is dating a Greek man, and he says he's going to away in the sea...
say goodbye forever.
Yeah. Don't wait around for that man. Let that man go.
Let him go. So, this is the scene. They're in the cave. She's very upset. He's sad. They're embracing. And, you know, they've built a little fire in there. And so, you know, to keep warm in the cave. And all of a sudden, she notices his shadow on the wall. She picks up a piece of charcoal made by the fire and does an outline of him and fills it in. Hence, the first work of art, according to Pliny the Elder, who wrote about this in his Natural History.
Yeah, I mean, clearly Pliny the Elder was not taking into account all the, like, cave drawings and stuff that we found
maybe
after the fact.
Didn't
but
know about them.
He didn't. Is what I'm saying.
He didn't.
Didn't know France was a thing. What's Lascaux?
Well, I mean, no one knew cave art was a thing until...
for a long time.
Yeah, for a minute. That's also an episode we gotta do, is some cave art stuff.
Oh, we'll do it.
Yeah.
We're just really into caves now.
Shit, I've always been into caves.
Right? So... according to Pliny, this is, you know, she starts representing her boyfriend, and she does it with the color black that comes from charcoal. So when you think about black in art and the materials that it comes from, they're ones that are really easily accessible. Like, you can make your own charcoal. Just put some sticks and fire and don't let them burn up totally, and then boom, boom, you got charcoal.
Boom, boom.
So, like, soot, charcoal... people had access to it, and that is a great way to represent figures and represent different representational. No. But so I read about this, and I talked about this book both in the Purple Mountains Majesty episode as well as Color Theory, I believe part 1. where I talked about blue. This is a great book for anyone who's interested in the history of colors, color theory, and it has a lot of points in here that relate to art and art history. It's Color, A Natural History of the Palette by Victoria Finlay. You guys remember this?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And I still want to get that book.
It's a great
book.
How could
I forget?
It's a really... And very thorough. So this specific chapter that she has that I read is on black and brown, but I just read about black. Anytime I saw brown, I skimmed over it because it's such a drab color. No, I'm kidding. We'll do an episode on brown sometime, too. There's a lot more to
There's
it.
There's a lot to talk about.
But
I love a good earth tone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good in earth tones,
Me too,
girl.
Dude. Yeah, earth tones are kind of my jam.
We all do. God. We just look good.
He's looking good. I mean, especially fall coming up, like, you want to rock those earth tones.
I don't think I've ever seen any of us in a color that was non-becoming.
Yeah. Because
if I did, I'd be like, girl, take it off. Yeah. You're not leaving the house looking like that.
Go back inside.
But back to black.
Back to black.
Oh.
Dang.
Amy Winehouse.
Yep. That was an important reference, everybody.
Yeah. Really great album.
Oh, yeah.
Rest in peace, Amy.
If you all want to take a minute to pause this podcast and go listen to that album, we totally support that.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good one. It's a good one. I was listening to it earlier and feeling very sorry for myself.
Well, you know, it's a good one to do it too, yeah. Man.
Just driving, like, wistful, thinking about failed relationships. And black! I mean,
yeah.
And it's back to black.
Right. And that's the thing that's so interesting about the color black. Yeah. It is associated with loss.
Yeah.
Death.
Grieving. Death.
Mourning.
Yeah. All of that. And at the same time, when you look at art, it's really used in so much. Mm-hmm. And, like, I was reading some stuff on early color theory, and Leonardo da Vinci said that black is kind of the absence of color were essential to the painter, and that black is the way of showing the shadows and the darkness as a way of dialing up the light and the color. So in a lot of cases, some artists have strayed away from black, or they, like, really get into black, and black is really, it absorbs all colors and reflects nothing back. So mm-hmm. in that way,
it's an abyss.
It's the abyss.
It is.
And sometimes it gazes back.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm like, yo, stop looking at me.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when you look at some artists that strayed away from black, I was reading about Monet and how he painted these pitch dark locomotives, but he didn't use black, he just included a bunch of colors to make up the dark. And there was a saying for a lot of impressionists, there's no black in nature, which isn't
true. Yeah,
it's not even remotely true. In fact, a huge part of the universe is made up of dark matter.
Yeah,
so remember
take that.
So
black is everywhere.
we'll get back to the impressionists a little bit later on and how they felt about black. But so Pliny, I believe, was wrong. And
surprise.
Where Pliny was wrong is that really some of the first paintings are what we know of, at least, mm-hmm. are the caves at Lascaux.
Right.
And so these Paleolithic artists were using black. That's the first real black, and then, like, red. So mm-hmm. things that you could, that were easily kind of accessible. So, you know, from the earth, and some of the most, like, intenser black pigments were being made by burning bones and mm-hmm. or grinding a powder of manganese oxide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And I think that's even more why, in so many ways, black is associated with death. Because it's made from bones in some cases.
It makes sense.
Or it's made from things like soot. So, you know, burning.
From dust
we
will arise, and to dust we shall return.
Right, right.
It's all dark.
Yeah.
This is a dark episode.
I'm in a really good mood to talk about darknesses. Because,
But, you know, in a lot of cases, too, black for various cultures over various historical periods was a color of power and protection. You know, you have examples of the word kohl comes from the Arabic word kahala, meaning to stain the eyes, and this is done under the eyes to protect the eyes actually from things in the air, mm-hmm. but also to protect people from demons in this belief. And so, and still that trend of like using black eyeliner, black mascara, yeah. like that. Black is a really powerful color for the face.
Truly, truly. We see this in the ancient Egyptian sort of tradition of wearing very thick black eyeliner yep. To highlight the eyes. I don't know how many of you out there feel completely ready to take on the world when you get that perfect eyeliner going on. It's like you put on war paint.
Yeah,
like, I feel a thousand times more confident when I'm like, the wings are on point today. They're symmetrical.
Dude, I feel you. It's so important for me too because I have teeny tiny little eyes. Like, they're just like little guys. They're just tiny. And I mean, I have really big glasses, so that kind of like offsets it. But especially if I wear my contacts, I have to wear like that heavy winged eyeliner to kind of like feel like my face is full.
Get that big eye going on. You know, the ancient Egyptians actually had a lot of positive connotations mm-hmm. connected to black. It mm-hmm. was for them the color of fertility because of the rich black soil that would be flooded by the Nile.
Sure. Yeah.
So black for ancient Egyptians was also, it was also associated with Anubis, the god of the underworld. And for ancient Egyptians, dying is dope.
Yeah.
Hopefully, unless your heart weighs more than the feather and then it gets eaten by the
fucked.
What the hell's the name of the guy? Oh. The monster that eats your heart?
I used to know and I cannot.
He's a hippo lion crocodile
hybrid thing.
Yeah.
And he'll eat your heart. He'll eat your heart out.
He's gonna eat your heart.
But anyway, black has had all kinds of different connotations throughout time.
Yeah.
So one of the biggest that we associate is with evil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The ancient Egyptians thought it was good, but the ancient Greeks associated black with the color of the underworld.
Right.
Because black was the color of the waters of the river Acheron.
I don't know. Acheron. I'm bad at
that. That separated the world of the living from the world of the dead. Hades mm-hmm. resided on a throne of ebony.
Is that the same as, like, the river Styx?
That's what I was wondering.
Oh.
Maybe I feel like those are at least referencing the same idea.
Maybe there's more than one river in the underworld. I don't know.
There's more than one river in the actual world, so.
That makes sense. The Latin word for black has roots in this word ater, meaning to darken, and it's also associated with the English word of atrocious or atrocity. So this idea that that darkness is brutal and evil and cruel. The Romans thought that black was the color of death. So I mean, we're pretty much a universal association with death.
Right, and then you have things like the Black Death, the Black Plague.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And even further establishing that connection between black and death. And, you know, obviously so much of Western culture wears black to funerals.
Mm-hmm.
And black is just so associated with mourning and death. And even, like, the process of how black is made in many cases. Like, today, black is made by combining multiple colors to make it, like, the least reflective.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when you look at things like what I already mentioned briefly, you know, like, charcoal is just made on its own, but ink is made largely using soot. So again, it's like whether it's using bones or soot, it's like there's this, you know, creation from things that are dead. So like soot, you know, it's once was a piece of wood and then it is no more. It's just the ashes. What was once maybe an animal is now a bone, and that's used to make these materials. So I think that really is a lot of why there is this really strong connection between black and death or darkness, evil.
Mm-hmm.
Like Black Phillip from The Witch.
Black Phillip.
If you haven't seen, I feel like we've discussed this movie before on the podcast. I don't remember. But if you haven't seen The Witch, it is so good. Watch it. Watch it with subtitles on, though, because it's like this old, ye oldie English from like Puritan era America. And it is so hard to understand.
I mean, it is authentic as shit in that way.
It's a really good film. But
mercy, dost thou not understand my English tongue?
No, I do not. Well, you know, it's funny that you bring that up because this whole idea that like the Puritans were very much like this austere people. And so black becomes associated with austerity and seriousness.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah.
And there's even examples of that in 16th century Venice, where the Venetians were considered to be like too ostentatious and partying too hard. And so they had to paint their gondolas black to show that, okay, we're going to rein things in now. We're going to be more serious.
We are a serious people.
Who decided that? Who said, like, hey, you can't have colorful gondolas anymore?
Probably the Doge.
The Doge.
I'm not sure, actually. It doesn't say in here. But
the Doge's palace ain't rocking any black.
No.
Like, that is not.
That's true.
That's a straight up.
Perhaps it was a religious zealot cruising through as they did.
Truly.
I can look into it more. It's just mentioned briefly in this book, but black also has connotations of being austere, reserved, serious.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's interesting. Because around the 15th century, there was a real transition from, like, medieval nobility wearing a lot of bright colors and, like, scarlet and purples that were associated with nobility. And then somewhere around the 15th, 16th century, black becomes the color of noble families, royal families.
Yeah.
So magistrates began to wear black robes as a symbol of their importance and the seriousness of their positions. There is a famous painting by one Roger van der Weyden.
Sounds
good. That was good.
Weyden.
You did a good job.
Van der Weyden. So, of the Duke of Burgundy, Philip the Good. And it's one of the earliest examples of someone of high status wearing all black. He's got a whole real sharp outfit going on. That's from around 1450, is that painting? And then black actually becomes the color of the Spanish Habsburgs. So it becomes associated with power, dignity, and also like humility and temperance. So this like really just like we're serious nobles now. Like we're not out there running around in fancy pants. Like we're
our literal fancy pants.
Our pants are black.
They're black. They're not fancy.
Yeah, an example would be the portrait of Charles V by Titian is showing a very sharp Charles V in his all black, and he looks real good. So
he's looking real good in that black.
He's okay. But, so this interesting transition from black as evil or somehow associated with death starts to become associated with nobility, starts to become associated with seriousness, with temperance. So it makes a lot of sense. It becomes this emblematic color of the Protestant Reformation in Europe, as well as the Puritans in New England, and also in Old England. Along with that, though, let's go back to the evil.
Go back to the evil.
Take on that.
And it really didn't take a lot to make the connection once again with black and witchcraft. And I don't think we just talked about this. There's like no episode where we're not going to talk about witches on this podcast.
Sorry.
Sorry, not sorry.
We're not sorry. This idea that the devil is associated with black animals, yeah. whether it be a black goat, as in the witch.
Mm. As in Black Philip.
Black Philip.
Call him by his name.
That was a handsome goat, by the way. Yeah. Handsome goat.
Was a good looking goat.
A black dog, a wolf, a bear, or even a black rooster. So I've seen the black rooster is kind of something that I've seen on like in like voodoo and stuff.
Well, also we can't miss the obvious black cat.
The black cat.
Like, that's...
A witch. A witch in cat's form.
Yes.
Yeah, the black cat becomes associated with witches as a familiar. Witch has their familiar, so the black cat...
Apparently we learned this when Ginny and I watched The Witch and then we did some research afterwards. Rabbits are really common familiars. Oh. And I was very excited about that.
Yeah. And crows. Ravens, crows,
So you got your bird and crows, I got my rabbit.
Crows really are terrifying. They have facial recognition.
No, they're so cool.
My friend was
cool.
tormented by one in front of her apartment. It chased her and picked at her hair.
Oh my
well,
God.
You know what?
Horrifying.
She probably did something. So.
The crows had a nest.
That's so scary. I hate that so much.
I know, because they're kind of big birds. Like,
yeah, that would be so scary.
Yeah. So the ceremony called a Black Mass or Black Sabbath metal is this moment at midnight where witches summon the devil, you know, with all their blackness. in medieval Flanders, a ceremony called Kattenstedt. Where they threw black cats from the belfry of the cloth hall of Ypres, I'm pronouncing that wrong, to ward off witchcraft. So, you know, this is still going on today.
Yeah.
People
throwing cats off belfries?
No, I hope not.
But I know that people get superstitious, like,
definitely.
If a black cat crosses your path, it's supposed to be like
a bad omen.
Yeah.
I get stoked when a black cat crosses my path.
I have a black dog, and he's the best boy.
Well, all dogs are the best boy.
Right, but he is the best boy. So let's just establish that. No, just kidding. But there's this sort of mania of the black being associated with the devil. However, closer to our more modern era, black begins to really become fashionable in a more sort of creative way. So one of our favorite artists is our boy Rembrandt. Rembrandt pioneers this black palette in his work, this like grittiness of the North. And so... I really like his...
Maybe that's where... Back when we were talking on our Eurobabes episode about our trip, there was a part where we were talking about Amsterdam, and I kept talking about, like, grittiness.
It's gritty.
You said it wasn't, though. You disagreed with me.
Well, no, because, like, here's the thing.
Natalie disagreed with me, and I was like, okay, but, like, Rembrandt's from Amsterdam, so I think that's what I meant by gritty.
I think that is what you meant by gritty, and I think what we thought is that you were saying that the town was somehow gritty.
No.
Which I think that Natalie and I disagreed, because I have never seen a cleaner city.
No, it was very clean. I meant it in a very positive way.
Right.
In a very, like, cool grittiness.
You know
not
what
in, like,
is.
A dirty grittiness.
It's the light.
Yeah.
It's the light.
Yeah,
and
you nailed it.
It's the light, and Rembrandt was from the Netherlands, and that...
is part of his work.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I think, going back to what I said in that episode, that's what I meant, is in a lot of ways, Rembrandt's work, I think, is very representative of that area in a very real way.
Totally.
Because, yeah, there's a grittiness about it. There's a darkness.
Corey was right.
Let the record stay.
So any painting by Rembrandt is characteristic of this very black palette. So, of course, the chapter in Ginny's book is concerning black and brown. And truly, you know, they're very similar colors and they go together. And really a lot of that palette is what we see in Rembrandt's work. So his self-portrait of 1659 is a great work to reference, to really get an idea of what we mean by the grittiness of that sort of northern palette.
Yeah. To Italy.
Moving forward to the Impressionists. We kind of talked about them for a second.
Right.
This idea of, like, no, we don't want to use black. It's all about light. So Gauguin, who we hate.
Man, fuck that guy.
Hate. He famously declared, reject black. Like, fuck you, dude. Like, you know, he's out in Tahiti with his young girls, and he's just like, oh, it's the colors. It's just so much color. And
well,
I'm just,
like, dude, okay, so, so there's this common association with, like, black and, like, darkness and death and evil and things. But, like, Gauguin was the biggest piece of shit, and he hated black, so that tells you something.
Because he was insecure, because I think he knew that he sucked.
Yeah.
But I hope he did.
I hope he did, too.
On the flip side.
I hope he was a sad man.
I think he was.
He was a piece of shit.
He had syphilis, dude.
Yeah.
You can't be that happy when your face is falling off.
Yeah. Also, like, you're losing your mind.
Right. Yeah. Legitimately.
Legitimately losing your mind. Like, that Drunk History episode about Al Capone.
Oh my God.
Syphilitic
moron.
Yeah.
I was supposed to say a dick pus coming out, and I didn't do anything about it.
I love that episode.
Oh my God.
It's so good. He's like fishing in his pool, like in his backyard.
Yeah.
So good.
Oh my God. On the flip side, though, was Edouard Manet, who loved black and became famous for what at the time was considered almost a vulgar use of black. That's a big reason why the infamous Olympia was so hated by critics. One of the biggest complaints about that painting is how sharply defined her body is.
Mm-hmm.
He uses a black contour on various parts of her body, making her look sharp and making her look not appealing. So, like, we get none of that grand Odalisque softness.
Right.
This is a hard working woman. And
it's a hard body, right?
Yeah.
She works hard for the money.
Yeah, she works hard.
And you better treat her right.
Yeah.
And
do
so
it.
That really kind of freaked people out. And so he was able to achieve that effect by using black. His portrait of, is it Berthe?
How do you pronounce that name?
Bert.
Bert. We've talked about her before.
Bert Morisot.
His portrait of Bert Morisot is a beautiful work that is very striking and intense, very much made so by this black palette. She actually had green eyes, and he on purpose painted her eyes black to create this very striking stare.
Totally.
Speaking of black eyes.
Oh no. Wait, oh, that was from the Halloween party.
I was about to say, why do you have this? This is so scary. Corey just busted out a porcelain doll, which is already terrifying, with black eyes, and I am very scared of that. I'm legitimately afraid of porcelain dolls. I don't like
them. My dad is, too. My aunt had a doll like this that she punched the teeth out of and pulled hair out of and then would hide under his bed at night and wait till he kind of, like, you know, was comfortable maybe falling asleep, and then she would jump out at him with it. And he's legit very afraid of those.
The aunt would
do you want to take this? Do you want to freak him out with it?
No. It would be, like, a serious situation.
To be fair, so story. It's just a doll I found at a Goodwill for our Halloween party last year, and then we thought it would be even better if we blacked out her eyes. So
it's truly terrifying. Back to Manet. One last thought on Manet is this quote by Pissarro, which I really liked. And Pissarro was another Impressionist painter, a contemporary of Manet. Pissarro stated that Manet is stronger than us all. He made light with black.
Dope.
That's dope.
That is
exactly,
that
man.
That is cool. That's really cool.
And that's what's so cool about it. And, like, that's, you know, what other artists were saying too. Like, using black just it highlights so many of the other colors. You need it. We need black.
We need it. We need it in the world.
Yeah.
We need it in art.
And
we need it.
We need it in life.
World.
Yeah.
I'm reminded of that quote by
Bob Ross.
Oh, man.
I actually got really excited. So someone did a post. I think it posted on our Twitter. Someone did
the zodiac signs as Bob Ross quotes.
Oh.
And Scorpio got that quote, the one about like needing dark and
to appreciate the light.
It's like my favorite Bob Ross quote. And it's like,
yes. I'm feeling emotional.
It's such a beautiful that quote after his wife died. Yeah. Where he
and
talked
that's,
about
that's yeah. a beautiful sentiment.
Sometimes you need the dark to appreciate the light, and it's like
it's so true.
Like, it's so real. Also, dark places are fucking cool. Like, come on. That's where the interesting shit happens. Let's be real.
Yeah. I don't ever do anything that fun in the light.
Yeah. I mean, I love the light, too. I love a good, bright, sunny day as much as the next person. But we just talked about how much we love caves. Like, caves are dark and weird, and outer space is dark and weird,
and
like
the ocean,
the deep ocean is dark and weird.
Yeah.
All cool things.
Yeah.
There's nothing more terrifying to me than the Mariana Trench.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
It's dark down there.
Yeah.
And
James Cameron's been there, director of Titanic. He went down there.
Oh, man.
I know, right?
I am like 100% convinced that there is insane shit in the ocean that we don't have even the slightest conception.
You don't need to. That's fact.
That's real.
That's real.
And that's like outer space on our planet.
Yeah.
Down there.
And it's
like,
lurking.
We don't even know.
It's lurking in the blackness.
I love there's the Planet Earth episodes, but there's also a series. God, I can't remember what it's called. It's all about the ocean. And there's episodes about like deep sea ocean fish. And they're so fucking weird. Mm-hmm. And it's so cool, the stuff that goes on down there. It's absolutely insane. The deep ocean is my idea of what, like, aliens look like.
I think
like,
there's giants down there.
Yeah, probably.
There'd be giants.
Oh, my God. With that, we should probably take a quick break.
Beware the giants.
Hey, Nat. Did you know that the FDA doesn't require tampon companies to disclose a list of the ingredients in their tampons?
That's pretty horrifying.
So major brands use synthetic ingredients and harsh chemical cleansing agents, whereas Lola is 100% cotton and BPA-free.
And for those of you who are a little more environmentally conscious and don't even want to use the applicator, they make applicator lists, they make various sizes, and panty liners for those who want them. And you can customize your subscription so you can get exactly what you need, you know, in the right sizes.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And it gets delivered directly to your door, so you don't have to worry about like
lazy girl's dream.
Exactly. Don't have to worry about running off to the store because they will be there every month at your door. Also, $5 off your first box.
Come on, guys. Can't beat that.
Pretty exciting. Head on over to trymylola.com/babes. That's B-A-B-E-S. And start your subscription today.
Go, guys. Do it.
Talking about black. You know it.
Yeah.
You should be familiar with the color black, I hope. But
yes. it's everywhere.
It defines most things.
Yes.
So far, we've been talking about just the history of the color black and its connotations and some important moments in art history where black kind of had like a shining moment or defined something. For the second half of the episode, we're going to move into more modern examples of the use of the color black in modern and contemporary art. So I'm going to start by talking about your boy, Kazimir Malevich.
Ah, yes.
Malevich is well known for his black square, created in 1915. It's exactly what it sounds like. It is a painting of a black square. He was originally asked to design a set for a 1913 Cubo Futurist opera.
Wow.
Entitled Victory Over the Sun.
All of that was a lot of words.
No. That's how I felt when I learned about it. I was like, I have many ideas about what that might have looked like, and they're probably all wrong.
Right.
But anyways, he was part of this group that did this opera. He was asked to design the sets. From what I understand, a lot of it was really crazy and intense and hard to follow, But there was one shining moment at the end of the opera where the backdrop was a single black square on a white backdrop.
Was sure. it a big square or a little square?
I think it was the size of black square, so very, you know, medium size. Like, I don't have the exact dimensions, but not huge.
Yeah.
Against a white backdrop. Oh. Exactly. That was Malevich's reaction. Really, this ended up leading to the creation of suprematism, which Malevich coined, which is an art movement that is focused on basic geometric forms and just basic expression of color. It really is breaking down in a very abstract way art for art's sake. So looking at just the basic elements of art, and Malevich, not only was he a big proponent of this, but he kind of created it, and he also was very clear about the fact that he created it. He was definitely one of those artists that was very open about, like, I did this. This was mine. So Black Square, as I said, it's this painting of a black square. And obviously this is one of those moments in art history that people that aren't in super into art and art history really tend to struggle with. Because they're like, how is just a plain black square art? And I think that's an entirely valid question. it's a valid question. I can try and start to answer it for you. At the end of the day, you still get to decide if you like this painting or not. Yeah. Like, that's your prerogative entirely. But a lot of people have issues with this painting, and that's kind of part of the point. Black square removes all references from anything figural, from anything, really. It's a black square. You don't have any other point of reference than that. There's no figures, there's no motion, there's no narrative. It's pure abstraction. It's a black square. And this painting was introduced to the world at the Futurist Exhibition 010, that's the title of it, 010, in St. Petersburg in 1915. And the way it was presented is actually also very important because it was hung in the high corner of the room, which was a location typically reserved in Russian Orthodox homes for religious icons. So,
whoa, yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah, I could see now what's going on here.
So all of a sudden we have these connotations, statements about art, religion, spirituality, the sacred artistic tradition up into this point, like so many ideas kind of being thrown out there. I mean, it was also, he was a Russian artist and this was a Russian Orthodox tradition. So he's also making a commentary, like speaking against Western artistic tradition. So just hanging it, just hanging this black square in the corner of a room, all of a sudden takes on all this really intense meaning. At this point, he was considered, at least credited with being the first painting or the first painter to create a work of art that wasn't of something. So, like, yeah. We're talking early 1900s, we're talking pure abstraction, like, this is new. You know, since him, there have been other examples of this.
Sure.
We've had lots of artists play off of this and play with this, and we had a whole minimalist movement, like, right. We had a lot of things. But at the time of suprematism, at least the way art history is written, Malevich was the first person to do this, to really focus on the element of a black square as art in itself. Suprematism has been described as the supremacy of pure artistic feeling. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the best definition, actually.
Yeah,
basic geometric forms and color, but there's supposed to be a superiority, something superior about this pure artistic feeling of this black square on a canvas, right? And this obviously resonated with people. Some people hated it. A lot of people still hate it.
Yeah.
It's a real thing. But there is something to be said about just that element, that basic element of a black square being a supreme expression of art for art's sake. Interestingly, X-rays have discovered a multicolored suprematist composition underneath the black square.
What?
I know.
Sure. That is so interesting.
I know, right?
Okay, so
we're just
there's
taking
so much,
a
there's
180.
So much going on here. There's so much going on here. Oh my God. Okay, so I just got really excited because this entire time that you've been talking, I've been thinking about Jungian philosophy.
Ooh,
and
yes,
this idea
who
is a contemporary or, you know, like, yeah.
They definitely interact.
Yeah, they these ideas are floating around the same time. And so this notion of Jungian thought that Carl Jung really put forth this notion of our shadow side.
Yes.
And that you should embrace your shadow side. And there's a balance there between the light and the dark. And so I'm really excited thinking about that there was this whole colorful composition. And then, how do you say his name? Malevich,
yeah.
Just was like, no.
Yeah.
And just covered it in black.
I think, yeah, it's absolutely fascinating. I learned this today and was like, whoa. I totally agree. I think there's so much more to be said about it now. Also, the fact that for years, for decades even, that painting was just about being a black square. Mm-hmm. And that's all Malevich talked about it as.
Yeah,
that's all
right.
That he repped it as. It's a black square. It's nothing more than a black square. Black square. Like, that's all
black
it
square.
Was. A pure black square. And in a very tangible, material way, it's not just a black square.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool.
Totally.
I wish he was alive to make a commentary
on that.
Right,
I'd want to be like, so...
sir.
Let me know what's going on there. What happened?
Yeah.
Why did you do that?
Like, part of me is like, okay, so was this really actually a big suprematist statement? Or did you just get frustrated with the painting you were trying to make? You painted over it.
Which is did get frustrated with it and just painted over it in all black, that is a suprematist statement because he felt then that the all black reigns supreme
over every color
that he was trying to make something out of before.
Exactly. It is a very interesting work. He made 4 versions. The one that's hanging in the Tretyakov Gallery in Moscow is the image you'll probably see if you look for a contemporary image of it. And it's in pretty rough shape. Have you guys looked at it recently?
No. Is it still black?
Kind of. I'm going to pull it up because honestly I think it's interesting, the current state of Malevich's black square. See?
Ah.
So.
Oh, yeah. It's all cracked.
It's like a cracked dinosaur egg.
It does. So it's not all black. It's kind of been cracked and it's not in good condition, which kind of, in my opinion, makes it an entirely different work.
Cool, though.
It does. It looks really cool, but
yeah.
it's an entirely different thing at this point, in my opinion.
Yeah, it is. And
yeah.
It's like this... You really are getting the passage of time.
For sure.
Yeah, it's very interesting, actually. It is in poor state for... this was not Malevich's vision.
Yeah.
But
it's cool.
I really appreciate it.
Especially because Black Square was, you know, heralded as this completely black square, the fact that over time the light has...
Mm.
Has come back through it.
Yeah.
I think it's very interesting.
Oh.
The light and the dark together.
We'll have an image of it in its current state. I saw this image of it in its current state a while back, and for me personally, I think it's more interesting. Like, not that it wasn't interesting to begin with, but I just think there's so much more layer, like so many more layers to the story with this one. But before we move on from Malevich, Interesting story about not really his life, more so his death. The black square became his trademark through the rest of his life. He was known for his black square. And so at his funeral, the car carrying his body had a black square on the front. Those in attendance held flags with black squares. One was fixed above his coffin, which was designed by a student in the suprematist style. And one marked his grave. And there's actually an image of his grave marker with the black square, so we'll put that up as well. But I was like, wow.
He took it all the way.
He did. He really took it all the way. And I have respect for that because it's just so oddly fitting. Like,
yeah.
It really fits. As we talked about before, there's connotations. Like, there's a connection between black and death. And, I mean, if you are known for a black square, you might as well take it to the afterlife with you.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, surely he didn't just, like, hold on to that because he was popularized by it. I'm sure that for Malevich, the black square was very meaningful to him.
Yeah.
And I think that is a really beautiful sentiment because, like I mentioned earlier, just this idea of the darkness and the shadowy side within all of us is an interesting concept, and it was something that was floating around during this time that this painting was made. And so it may be that the black square really meant a lot to Milievich in more than just a purely color-oriented, like, visual means, maybe a spiritual means as well.
No, mm-hmm. I think it was definitely just part of him, especially by the end of his life. I'm going to touch on one other important example of modern art dealing with black, kind of moving forward to the 60s. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people have referenced Milievich's Black Square.
Sure.
So many people.
Right.
Like, you'll find them all over the place. But I really love Ed Reinhardt. I love his work, and I honestly prefer his abstract painting of 1963 to Milievich's Black Square, personally. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little more interesting, and you will find out why.
Her note says, dig it.
It does. Yeah. It does. I wrote that down in my notebook.
I've done that so many times. Yeah, I like it.
Okay, so his abstract painting, 1963, at first glance, it looks like a plain black square, a plain black surface, just like Milievich's. Like, right. That's, I mean, I think they're similar in size even. Like, it looks like a plain black surface. In a lot of the low-quality images you'll find on the internet, you're really not going to gain the full experience. There are good ones. You will be able to find good ones. But a lot of them, you're just going to see a plain black square because that happens with the internet and distortion and pixels and all that stuff. It is actually a 3x3 grid of squares.
Oh.
Yes. I will pull it up as well. But the four corners have a subtle reddish tone. Very subtle.
Oh.
And the two middle squares on the top row and the bottom row have a bluish tone. And then the middle bar horizontally has a greenish tone. Basically, what happens is the cooler toned squares, so the blue and the green toned mm-hmm. squares, make a cross shape in the center. And then the four corners with the reddish tones kind of serve as the corners still.
Yeah.
So it really creates a cross shape in the square, but it looks as though it's a plain black square when you first look at it. I just pulled it up. And when it looks like a black square, does it not? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it looks just like a black square.
It's blackish.
Keep looking at it. Let your eyes adjust. This is an actual exercise that happened that I did in an undergrad class of mine. It was projected and we had to like sit there and stare at it for a while.
Oh, I see it now.
Right? It takes a while for your lights to adjust, or your eyes to adjust, but also the light in here is not very good, so I think it's a little harder than usual. But this, we'll post the link because this one does actually work if you give it enough time. So the idea is it totally looks, at first glance, and it takes a while, it looks like a black square, but there's actually these subtle color differences mm-hmm. that create this cross.
It just happened.
You did it?
It took a long time.
Yep, exactly. And that's part, like, that's important. It takes a long time, right? So it takes a long time for you to really notice what's going on. Ed Reinhardt, this is what he had to say about this painting. A pure, abstract, non-objective, timeless, spaceless, changeless, relationless, disinterested painting. An object that is self-conscious, no unconsciousness, ideal, transcendent, aware of no thing but art. Quote from Ed Reinhardt.
Hmm.
Now, personally, what he describes, I think Milievich achieves. Mm. I think Milievich does a better job of what Ed Reinhardt's describing here.
Truly.
That being said, I like Ed Reinhardt's better because I think what Reinhardt does do, even if it's unintended, is he says something about perception.
Right.
He says something about color theory.
Yeah.
And he's also, like, most importantly, saying something about the viewer's willingness to look at a work.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to our conversation we had with our good friend Alan Templeton,
yep.
A viewer's ability to actively observe something.
Sure. Oh my God. And when he said, actively observe. I felt like my brain just like, yeah, like I felt like I saw the light because I was like, I've been trying to figure out for so long how to describe what it is that I really learned as an art historian. Like, what do I learn as an art historian? What is my skill? And I think that a very short way to describe that is I'm an active observer.
Hell yeah.
Which is a big deal.
And it also made sense to me because I think that's something that relates to just my personality is like being an observer is just like kind of part of me. I always liked to observe a lot. Yeah. So it makes sense that I'd be attracted to something like this because that's what you're learning to do is actively observe. I totally agree. I love that term and we're going to use it forever.
We're going to talk about it so much.
But this painting requires active observation because anyone who just glanced at it would say, oh, it's a black square. Most of them probably would be like, that's not art, and they'd walk on. But to be honest, this work had to have taken so much time to perfect, to make it create the effect that he wanted it to create.
Right.
Because it looks entirely black. The shades are so nuanced, like so subtle and so nuanced. Mm-hmm. And he's saying something very important about color theory. He's representing how these different colors have a different effect. He's representing how not all black, like all versions of black are the same.
Yeah.
Like he's saying a lot of important things, but he's also saying, stop and look at this painting for a second, because if you don't, you won't see it.
Yeah.
And I think that's incredibly important.
For sure.
So for me personally, and granted, I love a good concept. So, like, I love this painting because I think it just has a lot to say on top of the art for art's sake idea. I think we're delving into perception. We're delving into what it means to be a human that sees things. Mm-hmm. All in a black square.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
It is cool.
One last quote by him. There's a black which is old and a black which is fresh, lustrous black and dull black, black in sunlight and black in shadow.
Mm. Sure.
Man.
Right?
That's really good. That's true also because as someone who wears a lot of black, sometimes your blacks don't match and you're just like, God damn it.
Right?
It also reminded me of that episode of Parks and Rec at Little Sebastian's funeral where Tom Haverford like shows Jerry all the different blacks and like Jerry's like they're all black and Tom Haverford's like excuse me like all the different blacks. It's true though, there is totally more than one black. Okay, one last thing, did you guys want to, because those are conceptually speaking, those are big works. Like, do you guys have any other thoughts on them? Or a lot of people struggle with them. A lot of people hate them.
I don't hate them.
I don't hate them. I don't think I've ever struggled with The Black Square by Malevich because I remember when I first learned about that work and being in an art history class in my community college at the time and dealing with having people in that class comment, like, that's not art. Yeah. They just painted something black. I just remember being so captivated by this work. And there's a lot to be said about these pure, what the style is described as, at least in this description of the work we're looking at right now by Reinhardt, these color field paintings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is something totally meditative about looking at a pure color painting.
Totally.
And black is one of those colors that is the void. When you look into black, you're looking into the void. You're being pulled into the absence of color, which is, in our universe, black is considered the absence of color. When we're talking about pigments, it's a whole different story.
Yeah. Right.
But ultimately,
if you listen to our color theory episode,
we'll get into that. Yeah.
It's complicated.
Yeah, it's very complicated. And what ultimately black is that which absorbs all and reflects none.
Yeah.
And that is
which in and of
really
itself
cool and amazing to think about.
What?
Yeah, you know.
That's why when you're wearing black out in the sun, you get all hot.
Yeah. Because
just absorbing all that sunlight.
Yeah, you're absorbing all the sunlight. You know, black is this universal sort of color that denotes this, what's the word that I'm looking for? Like the somberness. And I dig that. So
me too.
I've always liked that painting, and then now I've never really looked at Reinhardt's, right. But I love this.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I think it promotes as well, because when people look at this and say, it's not art, that's like such a snap judgment, and mm-hmm. I think that this kind of work, and pretty much all art should encourage you to really take the time and be an active observer,
mm-hmm.
But also really just to look at something and see if it makes you feel some feelings other than just looking at it and being like, well, there's not a scene. I can't tell what anything is. Like, it's not art. So I think these are really good examples of doing that. And using black especially just makes that much more profound, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
I mean, especially thinking about the time period, it's an opportunity to just be challenged as a viewer. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? There's so many different ways to look at and think about these works. So definitely check them out. We'd also like to hear your opinions, unless it's like, my kid could do that. We don't need to hear that. But like,
I mean, if you do say that, then
back it up.
Send me a picture. Yeah, exactly.
To us. That would actually be amazing.
Yeah. Have your kid sit down and paint a black square, and then we'll have a very...
We'll have a viewing party.
We'll have a viewing party where we'll actively observe these works.
Yeah, so that sounds great. Definitely would love to hear your thoughts on these paintings. Also, this is kind of a throwback to one of our color theory paintings. Our color theory episodes. We talked briefly about the color black in, I want to say, color theory part 2.
Yes.
And we talked about the invention of Vanta black, which is the blackest black. Well, there's a new super black on the market.
Fuck yeah.
Oh my God.
And it's called Singularity Black.
What?
These names.
Which I am obsessed with the name, because singularity is a reference to the center of a black hole.
Sure.
Right?
That's pretty much the blackest place you can go.
I know, right? Also, the singularity refers to the idea that eventually all of humanity is going to, like, be connected through technology, and we're going to just be like one big super consciousness.
I'm not down.
I know, but I also just think that's an interesting... I'm just saying, I think that connotation also makes it a really interesting name.
Right.
So Singularity Black is a great name. It's a solvent-based paint that absorbs almost all light and makes objects look utterly flat.
Whoa.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I want to see it. I want to hold it.
It's super cool. Shit literally, like, disappears. Like, it's nuts. Like, if you... Like, it's really cool.
Wait, like, it's not even there? Or,
no.
Like... You said it literally disappears.
Well, because it's so, like, it's so black and it's so smooth, it kind of turns into, like, a black hole. Like, whoa. Yeah, it's cool.
Whoa, that's crazy. I've heard that... I haven't heard about Singularity Black, but I heard that Vanta Black, when something is... It looks like it's a hole in, like, the... atmosphere.
It's the same, basically. It's kind of the same effect. Wow. Technically, when you get down to numbers, Vanta Black is still darker. However, Singularity Black is important because it was developed by Nanolab in Massachusetts. They've been working with NASA since 2011. It's a really great tool for, like, the aerospace community.
Sure.
It has a lot of science-y benefits. Yeah. But what's important is that so essentially with Vanta Black, this was about a year ago when Vanta Black, you know, hit the scene. And the artistic community kind of received a slap in the face when the artist Anish Kapoor, I don't know if you're familiar with him. I actually like a lot of his work, but I'm not happy about this. He received exclusive rights to use Vanta Black.
That's fucked.
Right.
So how did he do that?
Hey, I think he bought it.
Is he just wealthy?
He's a well-known artist.
Is he just a wealthy man?
I mean, I want to know. Wealthy,
sir?
He's a successful artist.
Whatever.
I've never heard of him.
Yeah.
On honestly, his work is pretty cool. We're just mad. But I'm okay. I'll get on the hate train because this isn't cool. And it was a total bummer for just, like, you know, solidarity in the arts community.
Yeah.
But Singularity Black is available to all.
Fuck yeah.
And it essentially does the, I mean, it does do the exact same thing as Vanta Black.
Equal opportunity black.
Exactly. It's not cheap, to be fair.
Right.
Like, nail polish size thing is like $30.
Yeah.
So it's not.
That's kind of cool. I mean, I feel like I would want to buy some.
Yeah.
And just like
paint your nails.
and watch my nails disappear.
I actually don't think it'd probably be like, because it's not regular paint. Like,
you put it on your skin.
Yeah, don't put it on
you
your skin.
You said solvent-based, and I'm like,
I'll put it on my eyes.
You're actually, like, okay, so it's available to all, but, like, the coding process takes a lot of, like, knowledge and understanding. Okay. They're very open to sharing the process. Like, artists want to use it in their studio.
Yeah.
Are welcome to come learn how to use it. Like, they're very open about that, but it does take time and effort.
Yeah.
You also, it's not a... You don't want to put it on your wall. It's just not going to work right. Like, it's not the type of paint that works that way.
What do you put it on?
A spaceship door.
You can put it on a lot of things. Like, you're just, yeah, you just don't want to paint a room with it. It has to do with, you can, I think you can do it on, like, ceramics, you know. It needs anything that is going to absorb the paint, it's not going to work the same. Does that make sense? So something that's not going to absorb it.
Yeah, yeah.
But they are working on moving it forward into a version that is going to be more universal and that you could paint your walls with kind of a thing, which would be crazy.
That would be crazy.
I like black, but I don't know if I'd paint my walls black.
Yeah, I have some friends in the Bay Area that are very into, like, metal and darknesses in general.
Yeah.
And they painted the interior of their home black. And I will say that it's a little bit much...
I actually did that in high school.
Whoa. Way too cool.
I had a room in the basement, my, like, junior year in high school, and I painted the walls black and the ceiling, like, kind of bright blue. Like, not a light, like, a bright blue, and then I did some, like, blue splatters on the walls.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, my walls were black. Which was kind of a lot. I tried to accent it with, like, lots of bright colors in the room. Like bright as in, like, neon. Like,
yeah.
I tried to accent it with a lot
this
of neon.
This was like a raver room.
It was. It really was. And my friends come over. Like, let's fucking paint this room black.
That sounds really cool.
It was cool. It was fun. I don't know that I'd do it again. But, yeah, so Singularity Black, it's pretty dope. One of the first examples of it being used for artistic purposes is Jason Chase's Black Iron Ursa, which I really love. There will be an image posted. It's this work in which he coated a sculpture shaped like a gummy bear in this black. Yeah, and then he put the sculpture, this crazy black hole of a sculpture, on a circular surface that has, like, colored rays, like, all different colors, like red, orange, yellow on the surface. But in the very center, there's a gummy bear-shaped object that is this black that will eat your soul.
Wow.
And it's really cool.
That sounds amazing.
I think it's a really great work.
Yeah.
I was very intrigued by it. And he's having, like, a lot of fun playing with it.
For sure.
Because just in general, it's just great for experimentation for artists. There's just a lot of possibilities, and it's such a new thing that no one really knows where it's going to go or how artists are going to use it, but there's a lot of possibility for it, and it is available to the artistic community. So that's really exciting. I'm really excited to see how people use it.
Oh, I just, like, pulled up a picture of it, and
dope.
It looks so weird.
I know, right? Isn't it cool?
Is that like a life-size gummy bear? Like a little one?
No, it's bigger.
Okay. Amazing. Singularity Black. I love the name. I'm really, I'm thinking of things like black holes now and, like, how just...
I'm going to watch some, like,
documentaries
about black holes or something tonight. I'm like...
Yeah.
I mean, we just talked about Hilmuth Klint, and now we're talking about, like, black and, like, the ether and shit. Like, I just want to... learn about the universe.
Go to some other realms.
Yeah,
I know. I really do want to go to another realm. Speaking of realms, I don't know. We just had the eclipse over here on the West Coast. So,
I mean, everywhere in the United States.
Yeah. It is, this episode will not air.
One of the best viewing places was where I went to undergrad, Salem, Oregon.
Yeah, one of the best viewing places was also Nebraska.
Yeah. Wow.
Like, really close to where I was. A friend of mine was at the same big, it was a park, and there was a huge, like tons of people were there. Fucking Bill Nye was there. Yeah.
I would have been freaking out.
Pictures of her, like, Bill Nye's behind her in this random town in Nebraska, because it was just, like, peak viewing for the eclipse.
That's amazing.
I've decided, though, next time it happens, I'm traveling somewhere where there's totality.
Next time it happens, there will be totality in Mexico.
Oh,
and
let's
I am going to Mexico in 2024 to go look at this eclipse. I want to
go.
We're going to go. On top of a god dang pyramid.
Yes.
And I want to be like,
god
black hole sun, won't you come?
Yeah.
Okay. You watch out for it. 2024 Art History Babes.
Mexico.
Black Hole Sun.
Yeah. Dang.
That's going to be amazing. That sounds great. I want to go back to Mexico, and I really want to go to Mexico with you because I think it's going to be so much fun.
I'm hella fun in Mexico.
Only in Mexico.
Yeah, it's the only place that I'm fun. But yeah, I don't know. This whole celestial event just happened, and I think that at the end of the day, our fascination with the color black is that black is this celestial thing.
It's another realm.
It's another realm. It's the color of the universe. It's the absence of color, which blows my mind to think about. Sounding very, I don't know, dumb. Like, when you close your eyes, it's black. And that's another thing.
Yeah,
it's when we're in darkness, it's universal that humans are, we seek shelter from the dark. Like, we need to, but we also need the darkness.
For sure.
And you can't really function if you don't have a regular circadian rhythm.
Yes.
We need the dark. And so humanity will always have a really complicated relationship with blackness and darkness.
Yeah.
And I just think that it is so fascinating that we're doing this, because are we doing this with any other pigments where we're trying to get the bluest of the blue?
I mean, to an extent we are. I think that is, a thing that's happening as well. But I think you're right. I think black means something.
Yeah.
For sure.
It's like a
for
sensation.
Sure.
Like, the bluest of the blue is just like, oh, fuck, that's really blue.
Like,
but the blackest of the black is like, whoa.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, very interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into the blackness.
We're all into it. We all wear a lot of black a lot of the time.
Yeah.
It's a pretty common color in our wardrobe.
We all wore black to our MA thesis orals, and that was not planned.
Not at all.
It really wasn't. We all showed up and were like, we're wearing black.
Yeah.
And you know what's crazy is I almost wore the most ridiculous dress that had a rattlesnake pattern on it. I don't know what I was thinking, but I bought this dress and was really excited about it. And the day I put it on and was just like, no.
Not gonna
this
happen.
Is
not right.
It's not right.
And we all showed up in full black.
Yeah.
Like, full black attire. And we looked fly as shit. So.
We did.
Yeah. So now all of our pictures just look amazing. We're all just like, damn.
What's up?
So
yeah. We did look good at the colloquium.
Oh, man. We looked so good.
We did.
Anyway.
We rocked it.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on black?
I mean, honestly, I feel like we could talk about it for a very long time because we barely touch the surface of artists that who have dealt with the color black.
Yeah.
There's so much more.
Every time we do a color episode, there's so much more to uncover.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably have a whole podcast on color.
Totally.
I don't know.
That would be cool.
I mean, who knows, right? we ain't it, but we do love our colors, and black is really fascinating to us. This idea that you mix all the pigments together, you have black, but in nature, black is the absence of color. And that just makes my brain
it's
go
all
crazy.
Of them and none of them at the same time. It's so beautifully representative of all of existence. You know what I mean? Because it's everything and it's nothing at the same time. Which life is everything and nothing at the same time.
And
you know?
There, you know, those of you out there struggling with your darknesses, embrace the darkness.
They're a cool place if you can approach them with the right mindset.
Yeah.
For sure.
And,
for sure.
But also go out in the sun sometimes, too.
Right. You know, vitamin D is a thing. And you need it.
So
true.
Balance, really, I guess, is the lesson.
I think it's like 20 minutes in the sun without sunblock, and you're good.
Yeah, it's a solid amount of time to spend in the sun.
Give it a chance, and then you can go back into your Vanta black hole sun cave.
Honestly, though, I'm just like, I think, I don't know, I'm a very colorful person. I like being out in the sun. I like bright things.
You're wearing very colorful pants right now.
I am. I'm wearing their yoga pants that are like kind of crazy tie-dye-ish.
They look like they're on fire.
Yeah, they do. There's like galaxies in my yoga pants. But, like, I love bright colors and I love bright things, but it's like you can only do that for so long, and then it's a balance, because then when the right time comes along, it's really fun to just go dark, to go into the maybe less bright, exciting things, and you just kind of have to, I think, oscillate between the two in a very healthy way. I don't know, it makes you a much more interesting person.
I think so too. Yeah.
Black.
We dig it.
We just pulled apart the philosophy of black.
I think that we did. And I feel, like, proud of that.
I feel enlightened.
Yeah, I encourage you all to stare at a black painting square for a while. Yeah. Make your own black square. Send us pictures of your black square. And tell us what you pondered upon after gazing into the void for a while.
Yeah. I want to hear what you're thinking about when you're gazing at the void.
Do it.
That sounds amazing.
That's
actually
your homework. Paint a black square and gaze upon it.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to do that tonight.
Let us know your thoughts. Yeah.
That sounds great.
I'm probably going to do that too.
Yeah.
Sure.
What else do we have to do? Let's do it.
Yeah. I literally don't have anything else to do. So.
Also, you could gaze into this doll's eyes
for a while. I'd rather not. That doll needs to go.
That's the to-go file.
Yeah, when you move, do not take that, because
it will haunt my doll.
It probably has a spirit in it.
It probably does.
Let it be on its way.
All right. So thank you for listening to our episode about black. Make sure to check out our Patreon, patreon.com/arthistorybabes. For extra bonus art history babes material.
Yeah, there are some of you out there that need more of us. And guess what? Now you got it.
We're doing bonus episodes for anyone who becomes a patron on our Patreon at any level. And every month you'll get an extra Art History Babes episode. So definitely head over and check that out.
Mm-hmm.
We also, probably by the time this episode drops, actually, we will have merch.
We're on the eve of merch.
Yeah. So arthistorybabes.com. There will be a merch tab. You head on over to it.
Yeah.
And get your t-shirts.
Yeah.
Get your mugs.
Yeah.
Get your canvas bags.
Yeah.
Do it. Do it.
Yeah. Also, check us out on all of the social medias. Like us on Facebook, please. Write us an iTunes review, and we will love you for the rest of our lives.
Yes, please do.
Also, email us any comments, thoughts, questions.
Yeah.
We sincerely appreciate you.
If you do our black homework, take a picture, post it on Instagram, tag us. We want to see what you did, and we want to see what you thought. We just want to know. I want to know you in your soul. Yeah, I do. I want to know what you thought about, like, gazing into the blackness. So.
I feel like we've talked about a lot of heavy ideas here, so we would love some responses.
Yeah, do it, like, right after the episode, too. Like, let these thoughts marinate in your brain while you look at the blackness.
Yeah.
All right.
Good night.
Goodbye.
Goodbye forever.
From Cabernet to Monet, they're here to slay the art history babes.
Wow. Corey, do you need a Ricola?
Honestly, looking at, like, the sound waves when you said that, it looks like a centipede.